You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Welcome to 2019. Do you believe how fast time is going by? We've actually been on the air for 3 years now. It's hard to believe. Time is flying. Well, there's a lot to talk about today, so let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. So here it is, 2019, and it looks like we are going to have plenty to talk about this year, just as we did last year. There's a lot of changes taking place in law enforcement, and unfortunately, most of them are not good. You know, I've been very critical of many of the political machinations in California and New York. Well, now you're going to be hearing a lot about Missouri, because in St. Louis, there is going to be a crisis. I'm calling it right now that there is going to be a crisis in law enforcement in St. Louis. Why? Because the new district attorney, the new prosecutor that is just been elected. All right, so we all know that Ferguson was the catalyst for one of the greatest sea changes in this country in the societal attack on law enforcement. We know that Darren Wilson was defending himself when he killed Michael Brown. That's been proven time after time after time. But that didn't stop the many of the politics and politicians from creating an environment that was very, very anti-law enforcement. We are still feeling the effects today and probably will for decades to come. Now, one of the individuals who has been staunchly anti-law enforcement was sitting on the Ferguson City Council. Well, guess what? He just got himself elected and just took office as the county prosecutor. Now, why is this going to be an issue? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because he is a politician in every sense of the word. And he is, what he's already done now is absolutely astounding. First thing he did when he came into office was he fired a number of the prosecutors that were in the office. In fact, those that were in charge of the investigation against Darren Wilson, Officer Darren Wilson, when decisions were made not to prosecute him, he came in. The first thing he did was he fired three of the senior attorneys. Now, that's a hatchet job if you ever heard it. So he's already taking people who have been who are career prosecutors and threw them aside because of his political agenda. So then what he did was, now this is within days of taking office. I'm gonna read you a memo that came out from the St. Louis County Police Association of the Fraternal Order of Police. And this is astounding what this guy is doing, Wesley Bell. I'm going to read a couple paragraphs of it. The police officers of the St. Louis County Police Association are disappointed and discouraged by the new internal policies of the St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, but remain hopeful that Mr. Bell himself will take immediate action to stop some of these changes and find a better and safer path to implement his platform. And I'm going to interject here, fat freaking chance. Now, I'm going back to the memo. The decriminalization of the failure to pay child support puts livelihoods of hardworking single parents in jeopardy. And more alarming, the abolishment of warrants on all D and E class felony offenses places the citizens of St. Louis County at risk for repeat victimization. Law enforcement agencies throughout St. Louis County must now enforce the laws with one hand tied behind their backs. This comes at a time when manpower shortages are commonplace and the murder rate is the highest it has ever been in the history of St. Louis County. Many of the crimes that now qualify for summonses rather than arrest warrants, including shockingly heinous offenses. Under Mr. Bell's new policy, warrants will not be issued and arrests will not be made for rape second degree, child molestation fourth degree, sexual contact with a student, possession of child pornography, abuse neglect of a child, burglary second degree, domestic assault second degree. Yeah, you heard it right. This prosecuting attorney is not going to arrest violators of rape, child molestation, sexual contact with a student, possession of child porn, abuse, neglect of a child, burglary, and domestic assault, second degree. This leaves me almost speechless. We are seeing the same type of thing happen in Boston, where the Boston District Attorney made very similar changes the minute that she took office. The voters of St. Louis County and of Boston placed this person into a position of what is essentially one of the highest law enforcement positions in the county. These people literally hold the lives of these citizens in the palm of their hand when it comes down to putting criminals where they are supposed to belong. Well, now, because of politics, because of their view on the political system, this individual, this Wesley Bell, who is now the prosecuting attorney, is basically allowing criminals to go free. Now, this is the same time when he has been heard to make threats of now trying to prosecute Darren Wilson years after the Michael Brown shooting. Remember, Darren Wilson, the police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown, was found to be justified in that shooting by all bodies of government, state, county, and federal. No prosecution was made, even though there was a great deal of political pressure to do that. Now Wesley Bell has taken over, and it is my great fear that he is going to take his political platform, and instead of being a prosecutor for the people, he's going to be an activist who is more concerned with his political agenda than he is with the people that he was elected to protect. So I have a feeling you and I are going to be talking about this topic for a long time to come. Let's take a flyer up to Massachusetts now. There's actually something happened that the politicians actually did right for a change. I'm going to read the headline to you. Massachusetts legislature passes bill guaranteeing confidentiality for police crisis counseling. So, in essence, I'll just read one other paragraph so you understand it. The issue surrounds crisis intervention services, which are debriefings or short-term counseling provided to an emergency service responder by another trained responder after a critical incident. So these services are essentially mental health services. What has happened here is this information was not being kept confidential. And that led to police officers being subjected to discipline, to ridicule to being portrayed as crazy. And this is why is this so important? The 2018 saw more police officers losing their lives by their own hand than getting killed in the line of duty. This is something that you've heard me talk about on the show many times. Post-traumatic stress, suicide in law enforcement. Well, this is one of the issues that affects that. When a police officer feels the need to get help, in many areas of the country, and Massachusetts was one of them, this information was not kept confidential. And so police agencies could therefore adjudge the officer who's asking for help to be a danger to themselves just for asking for help. This is one of those things societally that law enforcement has not addressed nationally, and it needs to be. So this is a state that just passed a law that guarantees confidentiality for police crisis counseling. And this is a step in the right direction. Believe me, this is not a panacea. There is still plenty of work to be done when it comes down to this issue. And it's really important that this issue is taken seriously by law enforcement leadership around the country and by state and local government, as well as the federal government. One of the things that my organization, The Wounded Blue, is tasked itself with is helping to change the laws, helping to create protections for mental health for law enforcement officers. Remember, the officers are facing not only physical danger, but they're facing emotional and mental crisis as well. And this bill in Massachusetts is an important step forward. I want to talk about, you know that if you've listened to this show any length of time, you know that I do not like to second guess and criticize officers' use of force decisions. Generally speaking, unless you have a lot of information or were there, it's difficult to Monday morning quarterback. Sometimes that is not the case. And in the case that I'm going to tell you about right now, I saw a video which shocked me, which embarrassed me as a law enforcement professional, and it sickened me. And when I read that Faulkner County Sheriff in Arkansas fired Deputy Keenan Wallace, I was actually relieved that a law enforcement leader had taken this action. This video that I saw made me sick to my stomach. The sheriff's deputy, his name was Keenan Wallace, had been dispatched to a call. This is over a dog complaint. A woman had allegedly pointed a gun at a homeowner who had a couple of dogs running around his yard barking at people. So somebody in the house of the individual who the police were coming to visit, who was actually the victim, this guy was an arrogant and uncooperative guy with the police officer, and or with the deputy, I should say, and there was a chihuahua and another dog, and they're running around the yard, and while the deputy was conversing with this guy who was an arrogant guy. I mean, he was uncooperative and you know, was being very rude and insolent with the officer. But suddenly, the officer drew his gun and shot this chihuahua in the face. I watched it and I went, what the hell just happened? And it didn't faze him one little bit that he just shot this little dog. It was a 9-pound dog who was not threatening him. I mean, good God in heaven, how do you get threatened by a chihuahua? And the officer shot him. And then continued his investigation like it was just a routine thing to do. Well, I got to tell you, seeing that made me sick. And the fact of the matter is that you know, use of force by law enforcement is one of the most important topics there is. To use your authority in such a way to act cruelly towards an animal, well, you don't deserve to wear that badge. And the fact that if you're afraid of that chihuahua, then you're a coward and you shouldn't wear that badge. No matter how you cut it, at least the sheriff did the right thing. He fired this guy immediately, and that's the way it should be. But this is one of those things that is, you know, law enforcement is taking enough blows that they don't deserve. So when an individual tarnishes his authority and badge in such a way, it just makes me sick to see. But at least he's gone and he will no longer have a badge, which he shouldn't have had to begin with, as far as I'm concerned. That, my friends, will do it for today's View from the Blue. And now let's go in the interview room where you're going to meet a great guest. I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. For my active duty law enforcement officers, and probably some military as well, if you wear body armor, you want to arrest the odor. Yes. You want to arrest the odor because we know how nasty it can get. Stinkyvest.com. That is where you get Arrest My Vest Spray. It's military police grade odor eliminating spray. This is amazing stuff. And you don't actually have to use it just for your vest, although it's made specifically for that. It is all natural. It has no harsh chemicals, but it's good for basically any odor eliminating at all. It's safe on your Kevlar. It is really amazing stuff. And you know how uncomfortable it can get, how hot those vests are. So check it out, stinkyvest.com. And it is the technology of odor-absorbing molecules that makes this such an amazing product. Check it out, stinkyvest.com.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest with me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. He's not only a dedicated law enforcement officer, he has created an organization that is assisting police officers and law enforcement officers all over this country, and I consider him a friend. Brad Shepherd. Let me explain who Brad Shepherd is. He is the chief executive officer of Warriors Rest Foundation, and he is a retired captain from the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. He served as a commander over the Troop J Field Troop. He was also the Oklahoma Highway Patrol's Officer Assistance Program, as well as Tactical Commander over the Emergency Services Unit. His pedigree is amazing. He's done incredible things for law enforcement, and I'm very proud to have you on my show. Brad, thanks so much for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks for having me, Randy. I'm excited to be here.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, there's so much to talk about today. This topic is, we're talking about, quite literally, the lives and mental health of law enforcement officers all over this country. And what you have created here with your organization, the Warriors Rest Foundation, is literally touching the lives of untold numbers of police officers around this country. Let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about why you created this organization and a little bit of your background.
Sure. So I spent a 25-year career seeing and navigating through even some of my personal tragedies within our department, losing some dear friends there, and recognizing that it takes its toll on my life, my relationships, and then the last decade of my career, I went through got trained in some crisis intervention and really started developing and growing a passion, a rich, deep passion to help other officers, other troopers, other deputies, law enforcement, communications personnel navigate this crazy career. Because we all need help. That's the one thing that I figured out, is that you really have a hard time doing this on your own. So I became peer support trained, and developed a strong, rich passion to help those others. And from that, late in my career, I started looking at, well, how can we replicate ourselves to do this? We need more people out here doing this. So that passion grew into, well, let's start teaching and training other people to be able to do this, and start bringing more people in to help do what we've been doing.
So you created this foundation, the Warriors Rest Foundation.
Yes.
And and you have quite a staff. You have a psychologist who is has a great deal of experience in trauma. You have all retired and active duty law enforcement working with you, and tell me about how your model works and how you assist other agencies to set up peer support teams.
Well, that is true. I'm gonna back up and echo what you said there, just to elaborate a little bit. Dr. Kathy Thomas is our clinical director, and she's a clinical psychologist with a private practice out of Stillwater, Oklahoma. but she has been working in the law enforcement and first responder industry for well over 25 years, and has an enormous passion to help law enforcement officers and their families stay healthy in this game. The other part of my team, which is my co-founder Brett Key, is still employed as a lieutenant with the Oklahoma High Patrol. Strong passion presenter, educator on wellness. Gary Berryhill, retired U.S. Marshal, does a lot of the planning and logistics setup, director of operations for getting these team builds ready and organized and get them trained. And then Gary Isbell, who's still actually employed as a captain with the Oklahoma High Patrol, he runs the peer program for Oklahoma High Patrol. But on his own personal time will come work for us, and they're all trainers. And then additionally, we can draw down on some contract peers, contract counselors that can come help us and assist us in building these peer teams. So back to your follow-up question there, what does this look like? So our main mission is to build peer teams. We want more peer teams built out there and replicating some of the successes that we've seen both through the Oklahoma Highway Patrol and the U.S. Marshals peer support program. So we want to get these peer programs built out there. So we go into an agency and we'll bring two or three instructors in, and we'll put them through ICISF-based training, CISM, Critical Incident Stress Management training, which is a crisis intervention piece. But along with that, we have a curriculum as well that we give to them about how does this whole thing work, how does the peer team function and operate, through some lessons learned, through some experiences, through some, you know, some people across the country who have been very successful at this, and we've drawn down on their experience and said, here, let's really help bolster this team. And then lastly, one of the additional things we do is give them some train the trainer type wellness programs that we've had some of our counselors build for us. And then they can start teaching proactively within their agency things like healthy relationships, healthy marriages, nutrition, substance abuse prevention, suicide prevention. So it's really, it helps start a dialogue within that agency about talking about some things that are sometimes difficult to talk about or not talked about at all. And it really helps that peer team give it some support to be able to really start having those conversations within those agencies. So that's what that looks like.
You've managed to do this very successfully. There are so many challenges that law enforcement officers face literally each and every day. Mm-hmm. They run the gamut from, using deadly force, visually seeing some of the most horrendous things that human beings can do to one another. There is single incident traumas that can have lifelong effects. There is the cumulative trauma of literally years of exposure to ugliness. And
absolutely.
And it all comes down to, I think at this point in law enforcement, there's a greater understanding that we cannot do it alone. And so your focus is peer counseling. Why is peer counseling so critical within law enforcement?
Well, I think a couple things to answer that question. Why peer support is so critical One that comes to mind immediately is the culture. And it's not just law enforcement, it's most first responders within their respective disciplines, firemen, EMS. The culture is prone to being very private and very untrusting and keeping people at arm's length. So where peer support begins to knock down the barriers of that is peer support is just two partners having a conversation. One of them just happens to be trained in maybe a crisis intervention piece or some wellness type training. So that peer that's trained gives his partner, his friend, not just a listening ear, but also starts redirecting an avenue of challenging their negative thinking or whatever difficult spot that they may be in. But the other piece of that, why it's so critical, is they are a very valuable conduit to that mental health professional.
A horrible situation out of Florida where a deputy killed his entire family and then killed himself while you know, negotiators tried to talk him down. So, you know, we're seeing this, and it's heartbreaking to see. And if we don't, as a profession, start learning and taking proactive steps like creating peer support within the organization, we're going to continue to see this. And are you seeing police agencies taking a much more proactive role in bringing you in to train people?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And this whole topic is a true tragedy. The numbers are alarming, and I'm not an expert in research, but what I've read is that we probably are not even seeing close to what the real numbers are associated with this suicide piece. But yes, the culture as a whole is changing to just because I recently got a phone call from a chief from out of state up in Northeast United States, and that was his very thing. He said, "I'm so worried that this may happen." Of course, we had that communication of you know, do you have any immediate concerns? And it was not an immediate concern, but how do you get out ahead of this? And so we had a conversation about how to talk about this, how to bring this up, and how to really have dialogue about, you know, how's everyone doing, really, you know, and what to look for, what signs, and you know, within your agency, what some of those things look like, and what you should be looking for. So I think the culture is changing, Randy. I think their eyes being opened. If from the suicide piece alone, but there are so many other things. Just like you said earlier, this law enforcement career really takes its toll on a person and the loved ones around him or her as they navigate their career. It's very difficult. It's a honorable and noble profession. Men and women with courageous hearts trying to navigate this crazy thing, and you're right, they need help. They need us come alongside saying, "Hey, I did 25 years. Here's where I messed up, and here's where I hope you can stay healthy." You know, just that kind of conversation piece. Those are the kind of things that we really need to be having talks about.
When you're out presenting to different police groups, for instance, you may be called upon to speak to one organization, one law enforcement organization, or you may be asked to speak to a wide variety of officers and first responders. Are you seeing within the culture now, are you seeing more acceptance to ask for help than you have seen in the past? or are you still seeing a lot of resistance for, say, reasons of stigma or even punishment for asking for help?
Well, that probably would be a tricky question for me, and here's why. I'm actually seeing more people asking, hey, will you come, you know, speak to us? But that, I think that's skewed because of what I'm doing currently. See, I'm not really seeing those people who aren't asking. So I don't know that that would be, I don't know that that would be a true answer to your question. My viewpoint would be very skewed to, I'm getting a lot of those phone calls, so I'm naturally going to see, wow, there's a lot of changing. But I also am still very in tune with my agency and a couple agencies that I was connected strongly with. And I don't see necessarily that change there. So I hope, I would love to think that this whole culture is turning and changing, but it is still, it's that tough persona that I can handle it. I can work through it. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be fine. This will go away. So there's still some of that. So I don't know that we're fully have turned the corner on acceptance of this. I hope we have. But there is definitely a lot of people reaching out saying, hey, can you come help us? Can you come teach us? Can you come train us? We're even getting, you know, we're getting those calls. Hey, I need a suicide intervention. Can you come help me now? So right. Those calls. So, yeah. You know, those we're involved in that as well. So that question, I don't know, would be a little bit tricky for me to really answer, Randy.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm still getting communications from police officers around the country who are they're frightened of their own administrations and asking for help because they're right. You know, we got to face the reality. There are still states that don't recognize post-traumatic stress as something real. And if you ask for help in some agencies, they'll terminate you, or they'll reassign you, quote unquote. So there's such a huge stigma attached. How do we as a profession, how do we deal with that and make changes so that these injustices don't preclude these men and women from asking for help?
You know, well, that's a great question. And I don't know that I have the answers, but I do know that ignoring it is not going to help it. So we really have to start sitting down at the table with experts in the field and saying, how your question is spot on. How can we start opening our eyes up to this and really start navigating this? Those conversations need to be had. People at the table really need to be sitting down and saying, hey, this is real. Just because somebody doesn't recognize post-traumatic symptoms as a you know, some type of, this is real. Well, you ask those police officers, they know it's real. It's real because I'm living with it every day. I hear the voices, I hear the screams, I see the images. You know, those that's what's real. So the question that you're posing is excellent, and it needs to be posed to all of us across the country need to be sitting up and paying attention, saying, hey, how can I help me individually as the leader of my agency or the legislator in my community? How can I help? How can I bring help to these men and women of law enforcement? So I think it's a great question. I don't know that I'm the right guy to answer that, but I feel very passionate about somebody. We all need to be setting up and having a dialogue about how can we can no longer ignore this. We need to start talking about it. So I agree.
And I think that I have a deep respect for those law enforcement leaders who take this subject seriously and do take a proactive approach as opposed to waiting for that critical incident to happen where they suffer the loss due to a suicide or some other traumatic event like this murder-suicide down in Florida. Rather than waiting until that tragic occurrence happens and then dealing with it, there are true leaders that take a proactive approach and say, let's deal with it now so that it doesn't get to that point. And I think that's the message that we need to get to law enforcement leadership.
Oh, absolutely. Recently spoke with a police chief that his department has pretty much carte blanche, open door to the mental health professionals. That includes their family members. If they want to go twice a year, if they want to go 10 times a year, go do it. Take care of it. We want you healthy. Those are the opposite end of the spectrum, but those are the ones that really make you proud that you know, we have some excellent leadership in our country over some of these police agencies, and those are the ones that really make you go, wow, I'm really, really glad to see that, you know. So there are some people out there who really get it, who really understand it. And I'll tell you that that police chief that I was having a conversation with about his agency experienced it. I mean, you can go right back to, in fact, the very question, the first time I heard him speak afterwards, I went up and said, you don't speak like normal police chiefs. I want to know what's different. And he'd had personal tragedy that you could draw back down on and take right back to, okay, from here I grew, and now I'm well aware of trying to take care of my officers because of that, my personal tragedy. So it was a really good, it was really fun to watch and see and hear him communicate his passion to keep his officers healthy. So, you know, there are some out there. It's not like there's none. But again, you know, we have to keep on this path of keeping these officers healthy and getting these programs set up to where we can all, you know, keep headed in this direction of wellness and positive energy for these officers.
One of the things that I found very revealing when I wrote one of my books, A Cop's Life, I got messages from cops around the country, emails, letters, saying, Randy, I want to thank you for writing that book because I thought I was alone in my feelings and I was really thinking about committing suicide. And I realized at that point that this is really what peer support is about, showing that the officer who is being affected by the trauma that they've been exposed to, they feel so isolated, they feel so alone, they feel like, oh, there must be something wrong with me because I'm feeling this way. And I think, isn't that really the crux of what peer support is? Being made aware that what you are feeling is not abnormal. You're not weird. You're not crazy. You're feeling something that is a common feeling amongst officers.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That's exactly how peer support works. Once you really go through that training, and then once you really start having a conversation as a peer, you start realizing, okay, the more I tell my story, the more I connect, and the people that I'm working with recognize, you know what, I'm not in this alone. I'm not the only one that feels this way. I'm not weird. There's not anything wrong with me. You know, those you're spot on with those thoughts. Exactly. And that's exactly how peer support works. It's not rocket science. It's not, you don't have to be a PhD to do peer support. You have to be real. You have to be transparent. You have to be willing to just sit there, and listen to somebody's story, and you're going to you're going to be heartbroken with them. You're going to be sad with them. You're going to probably share the emotion that they're going through. But it's so rewarding to be sitting across from somebody who will say, "Man, thanks, because I didn't think there was anybody else like you. Thank you so much for sitting here and talking with me." That is an enormous reward to be able to know that you've made a difference. That's why we enjoy doing this, and that's why we want to replicate ourselves as quickly and as fast as we can, because we want those people heard. We need those people. They need to be heard, you know. So you're correct, Randy. That's a spot-on observation.
When there are definitely, you know, law enforcement officers listening to this broadcast now. Many are thinking along the lines of, well, if I can really play a role and I can become a peer support counselor myself, how would these officers who are interested in learning more or even becoming a peer support team member in their own communities, what would you suggest to them? Is there an avenue that they can reach out to you for advice or to get trained?
Absolutely. There's the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation's Critical Incident Stress Management. I know that's a mouthful, and the acronym is ICISF-CISM. That's pretty much the baseline for the crisis intervention piece. I would strongly encourage also that anybody that wants to do peer work have a suicide intervention piece specifically. And then those two trainings will pretty much at a baseline level will prepare you to be able to be a peer. Some states, not all states, but some states recognize the CISM confidentiality piece and support that with state statute. Not all states do, but some do. So that's an important piece to recognize as well. But if you're really wanting a peer team, I would love to talk to anybody about how to do that, or if maybe they'd like for us to come train them. They're more than welcome to jump on our website, warriorsrestfoundation.org. They can do a little looking around there, look at our trainers, look at who our team is. There's some phone numbers on there. You can shoot us a call. There's a contact us that goes straight to our email if they want to reach out via email and say, "Hey, I'd like to visit." We'd love to have a conversation about peer work. That's our passion anyway. We'd love to talk to them about how to be able to do that. And the other thing is, if there's officers listening here who are they're struggling, they're having a hard time, they need to visit. Jump on the website, look us up, and give us a call. I say this many times. If you're struggling, you don't have to stay there. There's help. There's help for you. We can find you help. One of the important pieces that we've been doing for a while is Dr. Thomas is trying to create a network of counselors across the country that we can utilize at a moment's notice to be able to say, "Hey, in Utah, we have somebody called in Utah. Can we get you a counselor up there? And we're going to help you do that." So if you find yourself listening to this and you think, "Man, I could really use a listening ear," you can jump on our website and give us a call there as well.
So as we're running out of time, so I want to just say this, that to my listeners, I have attended the training that the Warriors Rest Foundation gives, as have the peer team of my new organization, the Wounded Blue. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that Brad and his team are incredibly understanding. They are competent and they are dedicated. And I just want to read the Warriors Rest Foundation on their letterhead: helping law enforcement build resilience through trust and courage. And I just want to say thank you for all you are doing for the American law enforcement officer, Brad. And thanks for being a guest on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. If you are one of my active duty law enforcement officer listeners, and you are like most of law enforcement, and you work extra jobs, you work the security job, the traffic jobs, most of the time you go through your own agency to do it. But there is another option as well, which can also lead to additional work assignments. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. These are my friends at law enforcement specialists, and they are based out of Arizona, but they are in most of the states in the United States, and they assist you in getting those extra work assignments. And the security jobs, the traffic jobs, and they work with your agency so that you're protected as well. So and also, if you're one of my listeners who actually needs off-duty police officers to work security or to work extra jobs in traffic or whatever, you can contact them as well. So go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com, and see about getting some extra work assignments. And they are great people. I know them very well, and they are some good folks. Or you can call them 1-888-572-2442. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. As we start 2019, I want to tell you about something I've been working on for more than 2 years, and it is now coming to fruition. It is called The Wounded Blue, the Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers. I'm really excited about this. I have neglected to mention it because I wanted to wait until we had our approval as a 501c3 nonprofit. The organization is going to be a national organization to assist injured and disabled law enforcement officers who have unfortunately been abandoned or left alone by their police agencies and their cities, very often to live in poverty. I know that is hard to believe, but it is very true. We are in the fundraising portion of our existence right now. And of course, we'll have to do that as long as we are an organization. But while we are getting ready to launch, it is time to start raising money for these men and women. If you would, go to this website. It is www.thewoundedblue.org. Take a look at it. And there is a donate button. And we are now a 501c3, which means that all of your donations are tax deductible. I will be telling you much more about this organization as time goes by, as we launch it, and this is a very exciting time. We are going to be changing lives of many in law enforcement. TheWoundedBlue.org.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives in the line of duty. In 2018, 148 officers were killed in the line of duty. This officer was the last to die in 2018. Police Officer 2, Michael Wayne Smith of the Henry County Police Department in Georgia. Police Officer Michael Smith succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained on December 6, 2018, while struggling with a suspect at a dentist's office at 378 Jonesboro Road in McDonough. The office staff had called police after the man entered the business and started to create a disturbance. Upon Officer Smith's arrival, the man became combative, resulting in Officer Smith deploying his taser. The taser was ineffective, and the man began to struggle with Officer Smith while attempting to disarm him of his service weapon. As Officer Smith struggled to retain control of the weapon, it discharged a single round, killing the man and striking Officer Smith in the face. Officer Smith was transported to Grady Memorial, where he underwent emergency surgery. He was later transferred to Piedmont Hospital for rehabilitation, but suffered complications and died on December 28, 2018. Officer Smith had served with the Henry County Police for 7 years, survived by his wife and 3-year-old son. Police Officer 2, Michael Wayne Smith, Henry County Police Department in Georgia. End of watch, Friday, December 28th, 2018. The second police officer to die in 2019 is Master Police Officer Joseph Shinners of the Provo Police Department in Utah. Master Police Officer Joseph Shinners was shot and killed in Orem, Utah, while attempting to arrest a fugitive at 10 p.m. Investigators had received information that the wanted subject was going to be in the area of a retail store at 50 West University Parkway in Orem. Members of the Provo Police Department and the Orem Police Department located the subject in the parking lot and attempted to take him into custody. During the arrest, the man opened fire, fatally wounding Officer Shinners. The subject was also wounded in the shootout and is in custody. Officer Shinners was transported to Utah Valley Hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds shortly before midnight. Officer Shinners had served with the Provo Police Department for 3 years, was posthumously promoted to the rank of Master Police Officer. He is survived by his wife and young son. Master Police Officer Joseph Shinners, Provo Police Department, Utah. End of watch, Saturday, January 5th, 2019. And the first police officer to die in the line of duty in 2019, Police Officer Dale Woods of the Colerain Police Department in Ohio. Police Officer Dale Woods succumbed to injuries sustained 3 days earlier while moving traffic control devices at the scene of a previous crash on Colerain Avenue near Henry Lee Avenue. The initial crash involved a vehicle striking a utility pole during a period of rain, requiring the utility company to respond to make repairs. Officer Woods was moving a traffic cone as part of the road closure when a pickup truck struck him. He was transported to Cincinnati Medical Center, where he passed away after his organs were donated. Officer Woods has served with the Colerain Township Police for 15 years. He is survived by his wife and 3 children. Police Officer Dale Woods, Colerain Township Police, Ohio. End of watch, Monday, January 7th, 2019. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. I hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast, and there is much more to come as we enter 2019. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. It's the new support and assistance organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. You're going to be hearing a lot about this because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement. We'll see you next week.